Welcome to the Practice Brave podcast. I am the host, Brianna Battles, founder of Pregnancy and Postpartum Athleticism and CEO of Everyday Battles. I'm a career strength and conditioning coach, entrepreneur, mom of two wild little boys, and a lifelong athlete. I believe that athleticism does not end when motherhood begins, and this podcast is dedicated to coaching you by providing meaningful conversations, insights, and interview topics related to fitness, mindset, parenting, and of course, all the nuances of pregnancy and postpartum. From expert interviews to engaging conversations and reflections, this podcast is your trustworthy, relatable resource for learning how to practice brave through every season in your life. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Practice Brave podcast. Today I am here with Elena Paparello, and I am saying that much more American than she does, and so I apologize for that. But I'm excited to talk to her today because she's a midwife, she's a pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach, she does CrossFit, she has a really great scope on the conversation surrounding training for birth and what that means and why that is honestly like taken way out of context and not the appropriate language that we encourage for pregnant athletes. And she's going to give us five different considerations of things that pregnant athletes can do to prepare themselves for birth through the scope of exercise and honestly just informed choices and understanding about their body. So Elena, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Bree.
Oh, absolutely. So give us a little bit of background on like who you are. How did you get into this?
I've done a lot of things. So here we go. I am currently a midwife. I work privately. So I work for myself in England on the South Coast. I am originally from Italy. So I born and grew up in Italy. And then I left and moved to San Diego, California, when I was 19. And I went to massage and holistic health college there. So that was my first profession. And through my experience in San Diego as a holistic health practitioner, I became a volunteer doula for the local university hospital in San Diego. They have this amazing program there where they offer a free doula to every woman who gives birth at this hospital. And I was one of those volunteers. I had no idea what birth and pregnancy were about. I was 21, super naive. Went in thinking I can massage people and make them feel nice. And saw my first birth and absolutely fell in love with that whole world and realized that I was in the wrong business and I needed to pivot and become a midwife as soon as possible. After that, I tried going through the American system, but it was a very long process and complicated. And we got a job offer as massage therapists, my husband and I, to go work in Nicaragua, Central America. And it sounded great. I wanted a break from the big city. And so we said, let's go. And we moved down to San Juan del Sur, a town on the border with Costa Rica, and lived in this tiny fishing village. Started working at a resort and then ended up opening our own little spa in our house. And we ended up falling pregnant quite quickly after getting there. So ended up having a baby in Nicaragua as well. And then with our son, moved back to Europe. But I had this incredible passion by then for birth and anything to do with motherhood. And with my holistic health background, I was just so fascinated. And I had been at this point at quite a few births as a doula, had my own birth, and I just needed to get into it more. So the same week my son turned one, I started university to become a midwife in Italy, qualified there, and then moved to England because it was presented to us as one of the best places to be a midwife, where the system is really supportive of the profession and they practice best. So moved here to be the best midwife I could be. Then I started becoming really, really passionate about athletes through founding CrossFit. One of the things I didn't account for is how stressful it is to be a midwife in a hospital system. And CrossFit became my way of supporting my mental and physical health in a really stressful, demanding job. But I fell in love with it, and I became part of the community, and more moms who were athletes at the gym, falling pregnant, were coming to me for advice. I started having this interest. So, you know, the universe, what this stuff that we're more interested in, the universe tends to show it to us. And so I started looking after more moms who were athletes and just developed a real passion out of realizing I didn't have the answers that they were looking for. I realized as a midwife, I wasn't prepared to guide athletes the way I was prepared to guide the general population. And I started looking for more answers and more training to be able to support these moms better.
Yeah.
I ended up studying for a master's in research here at the University of Brighton, and then finding you and doing my coaching certification to add that to the ways I can support moms.
I just love how much versatile experience you have and exposure to birth that you've had, both through your work in San Diego and then experiencing your own birth in Nicaragua, and then what you have, you know, like just knowing what birth is like in Europe. And just like, I would assume there's probably a lot of differences in experience and culture surrounding motherhood and birth. Can you talk about that before we dive into some of this? Because I find that so interesting, just how women give birth around the world and the support systems that they have and or don't have, you know, and just the differences there.
It's really interesting because they are completely different worlds and it's all the same. So there's some differences that are really striking in the systems, in the support that's available, and how, you know, what families need to navigate. But then when you're in the birth room, it's very, very similar. The process itself, obviously, birth is birth, bodies are bodies, but also the myths, the BS stuff that's done to women around the world. I ran a research study for my master's, and I did it on birthing positions because that was one of the things that really struck me across all of these cultures. I've seen birth in 4 different countries now, and the birthing positions are managed the same, as in we try to get moms on their back with their legs up in the air in every country, in every system. And it just, you know, so it's really interesting because private hospitals, public hospitals, it doesn't matter. There's some cultural things that we do and expect in the birth room that cross all cultures, which is, yeah, really interesting.
That is interesting. And I do appreciate that take on it, where it's maybe like the surrounding variables are different of systems and support structures, but the actual birth, like messaging or understanding or practices within the birth room or environment tends to be different or tends to be similar.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That is a brilliant way of framing it.
Yeah. So you knew that you wanted to work with athletes. And because you were doing CrossFit, you knew that was an outlet for you. You really kind of started to understand that athlete brain. And I'm sure you've heard the sentiment of, or almost I think people want to use the sentiment of like training for birth or train for birth to in some ways justify that pushing hard or some of their choices surrounding their training of like being a badass, trying to push boundaries a lot in the name of, well, I'm just training for birth. So talk to me a little bit about that sentiment and how you feel about it.
This is one of the topics I'm really passionate about because I think we've gotten into a really skewed way of what preparing for birth actually means. And I'll hold my hand up and say that I've definitely fell for it at the very early stages of my support for athletes. I think there's a really strong marketing salesy message that refers to if you do these exercises, if you follow this particular program, you can prepare for this birth. Mm-hmm. And it sells really well to athletes because it's what we do. We set a goal and we reverse engineer it and train for that particular thing, which works really well for sports. It doesn't really apply to motherhood, and it doesn't really apply well to birth, because there's so much more nuance, there's so much more personal considerations and circumstantial that you can't train for. So it's a much broader conversation than do this program and you'll have your dream birth.
Right. Yeah, I totally, 10 years ago, this is still like really common messaging. And 10 years ago, there wasn't an abundance of information. And so it was either like really conservative messaging, like don't lift over 15 pounds or whatever. A lot of fear based around being like a pregnant athlete, or it was the other end of the spectrum, which was like justifying training by being a badass and saying, well, if you train for birth, you're going to have an easier birth and then you're going to bounce back faster. And that was the narrative. That was honestly the only narrative for pregnant athletes. And this was 10 or 11 years ago. And that was absolutely what I gravitated to. And it was how I justified a lot of my choices, was like, well, I was fit before. My body, you know, is strong. I'm doing it for X, Y, and Z reasons. If I train like this, then I'm going to have a natural childbirth. And then I'm going to bounce back so much faster and be back to what I want to do. That was the belief system hardcore for me and the community that existed back then within that realm, which is, again, so much smaller than what it is now. And that's what was sold. It was good marketing. And people still want to sell that. And it is still a belief system that we want to identify with as healthy, natural, strong, fit, whatever minded humans.
100%. And I think at the crux of it comes a shifting in what the objective actually is. And I think we get stuck in this idea that if we have the birth we want, we will then bounce back quickly and have the recovery we want. Okay. I think we get stuck on the technicalities, as in, I'm going to train for the dream birth, which for most, you know, statistically, most pregnant athletes will plan for an undisturbed, you know, uncomplicated physiological birth, vaginal birth, right? That's what most people want. Some people want a planned cesarean. The majority will plan an uncomplicated vaginal birth. But what if that was not the most important piece of the puzzle? What if it wasn't about where your baby comes out of, to keep it really simple, but it was about how you felt through the experience and who you find yourself to be on the other side of that experience? Because I think a smooth recovery, a quick return to training, a quicker finding yourself in this new life doesn't come from a vaginal birth. There's no guarantee. And it comes from a birth where you feel empowered, you feel in control, you feel respected. I see the difference from moms that come out of their birth feeling broken, feeling traumatized, feeling really disappointed in themselves and their performance, especially as athletes. That's another conversation about the particular challenges that we face. But there's so many moms these days. The rates of birth traumas keep skyrocketing. We're at about 30%. That's one in three moms that will come out of their birth with, you know, feeling defeated, feeling powerless. And then you start motherhood that way. Right? Now, physically, you might have had the vaginal birth you were planning. But if all of these other elements weren't in line and you come out feeling so defeated, then recovery is hard and motherhood is hard and returning to training is really hard. Or you could have a birth that maybe goes to plan, maybe it doesn't. but you feel empowered and controlled, respected, heard, and you come out of it feeling confident and feeling a whole new sense of self. And that propels you into a recovery that is more powerful, that is more intelligent, that is more supported. That cesarean or vaginal birth isn't the crux of it. It's way beyond that.
Right. God, you said so much there that, like, you know, I feel like the training for birth sentiment, or that even that feeling that we're trying to capture by identifying with that, truly sets us up for failure. Again, regardless of how the baby comes out, but it's like we have to manage expectations going into birth and how we attach our identity or outcome to however the baby comes out or whatever the experience was like. Again, like you said, and I obviously, you know, you and I are very aligned, and I hear so much of the coach course in your voice, but it's important because, like, birth and how the baby comes out, like, all of it is relative. There's not one great or better or right way to have a baby. Like, and I mean, I know that we're really aligned here, and you're a midwife. Like, obviously you help people have vaginal births, but also we know that that is not the end all be all to a healthy, right, or best situation for any given woman on any given day.
No, I have seen moms come out of births that you would look at them and it's like, okay, well, this is what every woman dreams of, right? Water births with candlelight and all of that. And they come out feeling completely, like, shaken and traumatized by that. And I've had moms, including myself, and I know including you with your second birth, come out of a cesarean birth feeling confident, empowered, and ready for this next challenges that we know we'll face as new moms. We're getting to know a new little human, and we're getting to know ourselves again. But with the confidence that we've just gone through that powerfully, we're going to be able to handle this. And that's what I support my clients to have, because to me, that's a lot more important than the statistics of, you know, vaginal versus cesarean births or any of that. Like, at the end of the day, it's how you feel and who you feel you can be in this new life, in this new identity that you've, you know, prepared for, or whether you prepare or not, you're going to be thrown into it.
Right. So. Right. Well, I love that. And I think, you know, there's so much to being, like, informed that goes beyond, like, procedural being informed. It has to go around, like, with your mental and emotional attitude and perspective on who you are, and honestly having, like, an adaptable and open mindset instead of, like, a fixed birth plan or a identity or an expectation that is so rigid that anything outside of that feels like failure. And athletes, we take that shit really personally. And like you said, that's a very hard way to enter motherhood with rigid expectations, because motherhood, get ready, because there's nothing, like, there are so many things that you have to adapt to that we don't have control of. And if we enter it with rigid expectations or feeling like we failed or did something wrong or, like, less optimal, then that's just a really hard place to start a season of, you know, of change.
Absolutely. And birth, you know, this transition, right? We can use the word for it, matrescence, but this transition into, you know, maiden to mother, if we want to go down that route, this rite of passage, it changes us, right? It transforms us. We are different people on the other side. And so it's, I see preparing for birth more as a much broader, more nuanced, and more holistic preparation to welcome in this new version of you, because you're going to have to let something go of who you used to be to make space for who you're about to become. And we know this. It's so much better on the other side. Like, we are so much stronger and more resilient, and we elevate ourselves to, you know, complete new heights as mothers. And it's so much easier as a transition when we prepare to start it powerfully with the right support around us. And and that flexibility, right? Like you say, like, that letting go of that rigidity, that it's got to look a certain way.
It's so funny. I remember I was blogging back in the day before I had Cade. There wasn't really, like, a lot of social media. So I was blogging, and I remember I was pregnant and I wrote And this, like, the blog doesn't even exist anymore. I don't know what happened to it. Like, it doesn't exist. But this sentiment is like burned into my brain because I just feel like I trolled myself so hardcore. It was like, well, a lot of people talk about how they're going to change and, you know, motherhood changes you, but I'm going to be different. Like, I'm going to be the same. And like, he's going to complement my life. Like, he's going to come in and like fit in with basically who I am, how I live, what we do. And it was like such a ego-led sentiment, even though I didn't really realize that at the time. I thought it was like, I'm taking control and, you know, this is how I'm going to do it different. And it's just funny because that people who have those rigid expectations end up getting rocked because you're like, actually, my baby won't stop crying. My birth didn't go as planned. Breastfeeding is hard. And I just feel like I got trolled in so many different ways because I had such expectations around who I thought I was going to be as a mom, what kind of baby I was going to have, what kind of birth I was going to have, what kind of experience I was going to have, as if I had all of this control. And we really don't have control. But what we do have control of is our expectations, our attitude, and our willingness to just like, in so many ways, surrender and like, give yourself the time and grace to adapt and figure it out rather than holding on to a rigid belief system or a really set way of living and thinking and then making ourselves crazy when our lifestyle, our body, our baby, whatever doesn't adapt to us. Like, we have to adapt to it.
100%. Yes. So yeah. I find it's what I try to often talk to my clients about. It's finding this balance, right? Because I'm not saying you're completely out of control, because you are not, right? You have a lot of agency in this process, in your pregnancy and birth, right? There's a lot of things you can choose to do or not to do. You opt in and out of lots of things, and those decisions will shape the journey. So you have a lot of agency. And this isn't just your journey anymore. When you decide to have a baby, you're signing up to now share your life with another human. And you don't get to choose that human, what their needs and wishes and goals and dreams are going to be. So no, you're not an empty vessel, but you're also not able to have the same amount of control you had over your body, your life, your priorities that you had before. So it's navigating that in-between place that is difficult. And it's also doesn't sell because you can't market nuance very well. And so the messaging out there is very black and white, but none of this journey is black and white. And when you're on the other side of birth, you know, I always say to my clients, like, this is pregnancy and birth prepare you for motherhood. They are designed as rites of passage to prepare you for motherhood. And the biggest lesson you're probably going to learn is that your job is to do the best that you can. That's the job, right? It's not being attached to outcome. It's being flexible. And every step of the way, you do the best that you can with the information you have. Because on the other side, you're going to have a baby who's a human on their own. And this is their story too. So you'll get to know them. And as you navigate that, you're going to do the best that you can every step of the way. I stopped at one baby. I didn't have a second. So I don't know what that's like, but you've had that experience. I'm sure there's things that you did with your first that when you had your second, you were like, okay, we're going to do it differently now because my best is different now.
Exactly. Because we change. We have so much more, you know, like I talk about athletic maturity a lot, right? Well, so there was that element, but there was also like maternal maturity that happens where you gain perspective. You start to realize the things that like what's worth worrying about or trying to control and like other things where you just like, you have so much more surrender and so much more grace. And I think that's what creates just different perspective. And my second baby and experience was in most ways like so much easier than my first. So like that made it that automatically kind of made it a better experience was just like the variables were a lot more positive than the first time. But yeah, you just, who you are as a mother changes, I think, with every child that you have. And that's, there's a good opportunity there for growth and the evolution that occurs.
Love that. Absolutely.
Well, let's get into the five things every pregnant athlete should know. And I love that you wrote these out. And I would love for you to elaborate on each of these points. So the first one you mentioned was A fit pregnancy doesn't mean an easy birth. In fact, it may be the opposite. So this is a nice hot take, and I'd love for you to explain.
We'll start controversial right away. So this is where my experience clashes a little bit with the research, and I'll start with that because I know when every time this conversation comes up, there are the research geeks like myself who will review it, and actually, the research does not show that athletes have more difficult births. This has not been shown. And as a midwife, that's been very much my experience. Again, I don't have statistical relevance here, but for what I see, I see athletes having a more difficult time, especially when it comes to the pushing phase or near the pushing phase of a birth. Often we run into some problem. Not all the time, but sometimes we do. And a lot of it has to do, from what I've seen, I think a lot of it has to do with hypertonic pelvic floors and additional tension around the pelvic area, which get in the way of baby moving the way they need to, and us being able to, like, our pelvic floor needs to open and release and relax to a whole different level to let a baby through. And so a really tight pelvic floor that's hanging on for dear life all the time is potentially going to have a difficult time having that opening. So usually we see a longer pushing phase that lasts hours, and or interventions to speed up the birth, or we end up with cesareans because we can't get this baby born vaginally. So
that would be like them not really able to dilate because they're like holding so much tension there, or because like the muscles are just trained in holding. Like, tell me about that.
In my experience, it's baby's position that's causing the challenge with the dilatation. So the cervix opens in response to baby's head pressing. If you think of putting on like a turtleneck jumper, mm-hmm. right? It's jumper. Not it's a sweater. A turtleneck sweater. If you think,
I like that. This is San Diego.
A little bit. So if you think about trying to put that on and you're just pulling the neck of the jumper over your head, nothing's going to happen, right? You're not going to be wearing that thing anytime soon. What you need to do is put some pressure on it, stretch it, but also push your head through. Okay, the cervix works very much the same way. The contractions, the hormones, they will make it softer and they will start pulling on it. But without the pressure of the baby making their way lower and pushing through it, you're not going to dilate past a certain point because there's no pressure behind it. So in my experience, most problems with slow labors where the cervix doesn't open as quickly, and the baby doesn't come down as well, come from baby not able to rotate and find the ideal position for them. It can simply be a longer labor. It doesn't mean that baby's not going to come down, but then you have the complexities of a longer labor, because on one hand, you have a mom who can get to a point of exhaustion, depending how long labor is and what her reserves are and all of that. And then you have a medical system that does not really allow for different bodies needing different times to birth their babies. And that's a whole other conversation that we can have. But you have those two things that really can get in the way of someone being able to have a vaginal birth because of this complexity. A lot of it has to do, in my opinion, with tightness of ligaments, tendons, and muscles around the pelvic area.
Got it. For them not, for that longer labor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit like having obstacles in baby's way, and baby needs to rotate more and, or finds it a bit more difficult to rotate because there's a really strong psoas muscle, really strong hip flexors that are really big and bulky in the pelvis. And now baby has to navigate a smaller space because of it. Things like that can definitely have an impact in what I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I certainly feel like that is what was a contributing factor to having an emergency C-section with Kate. Because I remember I was like laboring, like standing up, holding in a jerry, but like, I could not, there was like no way I could like relax. I just like with every contraction, it just was like truly like a whole body contraction. It was not, I didn't feel like there was any part of me that could like let go of tension, nor was I really told any of that despite going through natural childbirth education. So.
Yeah. I mean, before I did all of my extra training to be the midwife I am now, I used to tell fit moms that they would have a great birth because they were fit pregnancy, you'd be fine. And then I started being in the birth rooms with these moms and I was like, why is this not working? And so, you know, being fit is important. We know at least 150 minutes of activity per week. Like we know being fit makes a difference. Sure. But I think there's clever ways of supporting our fitness in pregnancy that also support our birthing bodies and don't get in the way of that.
I think it's a really great perspective and I'm glad you shared it. Okay. So point number two is training as much as possible for as long as possible is more likely to cause damage than to help you recover quickly. Another hot take.
This is another very mainstream take, isn't it? We see athletes, you know, doing amazing, crazy things all the way, you know, through their pregnancy. Look what I was lifting the day before I gave birth and all of those beautiful things. And I'm not judging to each their own. And this is very nuanced and personalized, and it can be very appropriate for some. But if we look at generalizing a little bit this conversation, I think we need to look at pregnancy, you know, in line with what you teach us in the certification, looking at pregnancy as preparation for your life after baby. Pregnancy isn't the time you're going to keep up your running pace. This isn't the time you're going to, you know, lift the heaviest, you know, be the fastest. This isn't that. And you know, at the end of this process, there's birth and then there's a recovery. So looking at it as a deload and looking at it as a process of preparing for what's to come, just like you would prepare for a competition, right? And I know we understand, like, we prepare for a competition by, you know, potentially training as hard as we can, okay. But more recently, we are actually looking at the importance of deloading before a competition, right? So let's look at pregnancy in a similar way. Let's look at this is the phase where we deload and we are really intelligent and intentional about what we put our body through. Because pushing as far as you can because you can is what will contribute to you having a tighter pelvic floor, really tight hip flexes, overworking your pelvic floor, where then you predispose yourself for more problems, which will slow down your recovery because, you know, pelvic organ prolapse and all of those kind of, you know, incontinence and all of those kind of complexities. Let's work to prevent those, not, you know, this thing that we need to try and, you know, run really fast and lift as heavy as we used to. It's an ego-driven thing. And that's one of the things we need to start shedding as we prepare for motherhood.
Absolutely. Great point. Point number three, not all vaginal births are created equal. Forceps can cause more pelvic floor dysfunction and challenges than a cesarean birth. I'm so glad you said this.
When moms tell me, oh, well, I just want to have the birth with the quickest recovery. So surely that's a vaginal birth, right? Because a cesarean takes longer to recover from. And that's not necessarily true. Depends. All vaginal births are different. And it very much depends what your vaginal birth is like. And sometimes I see, again, especially athletes, we obsess over vaginal birth is good. Vaginal birth is what's going to help me best. And we get ourselves stuck into that mentality. We push past the limits. We push past what, you know, our intuition might say and our body's telling us, because that's what we do. We're very good at that. And then we find ourselves, you know, way down the line, exhausted and having a forceps birth potentially, or, you know, any type of instrumental birth that could also be a Kiwi cup or the old style ventouse,
like a suction.
Yeah, like a vacuum. Exactly.
I'm like, a Kiwi what?
Yeah. So the modern ones are called Kiwi cups.
Oh, okay.
They're like these little cups that you put on baby's head and then pump the vacuum and cool. Anyway, these births usually come with episiotomies, which are, you know, a surgical cut to your perineum that's cutting your pelvic floor muscles. And they usually come with a much tougher healing for your pelvic floor, your perineum. And, you know, a lot of moms recover quite well, but not all do. And some have, you know, months and some years of work to recover. And it impacts, you know, your sex life. It impacts a lot of elements of your life beyond training. So this idea that as long as we have a vaginal birth that sets us up, like, not necessarily. You know, I might come across here as like a really strong advocate for cesarean births. I'm really not. I am actually I'm a midwife, and my primary job is actually home births. So that's not really what I promote. But beyond any specifics, I promote healthy moms who make empowered choices and feel really good about their experiences. And I just want people to open their eyes and realize that cesareans aren't necessarily the worst thing or giving you the worst recovery. You can recover really, really well from a cesarean when you have good support, good care, and you might be much better off that way than heading down the route of vaginal no matter what, and, you know, put yourself through a difficult forceps birth and your baby.
Absolutely. And, you know, I agree. Like, I think sometimes when you say things like this, people automatically think that means that your team C-section, but really it's like, team, be informed and understand that this is not solely about baby safety. Of course, that's the number one priority, and experience number one. Yeah. Like, that is important. And we have to look at like mom's health, mom's pelvic floor function. And that has been left out of a lot of the conversation about what happens to the mom on the other side in her body, in her quality of life. It's not this like flash in the pan birth experience. It's like, what surrounds that? What about what comes after that? And that's the part of the conversation that's really neglected in research. And when we talk about feeling, quote, informed going into birth, like, people, oh, I probably get canceled in some ways for saying this, but like, we know that like forceps and vacuum are the number one cause of pelvic organ prolapse for women. We know that. Like, that is the thing. And vaginal birth, like, right? Like, we know that that is the main reason people have pelvic organ prolapse, or the number one cause for that. So if you're feeling really like you want to be informed, then you should know, like, what are the pros and cons of a vacuum, forceps, whatever, and how can I weigh that against another birth option like cesarean? I know personally, if I were to be in that situation, knowing what I know about pelvic floor health long term, and I was given the opportunity to choose between a forceps birth and cesarean, it'd be cesarean all day, right? I don't want to take the risk personally of like pelvic floor injury long term. But we aren't told that. We are not told that. That is left completely out of the conversation, even amongst very skilled medical professionals. It's still just really freaking invasive.
It is. And there's a complete like bias around even the medical professionals, how a vaginal birth is still superior to a cesarean. It has better outcomes. And it depends what you look at. It depends what the goalpost is. And I agree, in some ways, a cesarean is a lot more invasive. I mean, it's major surgery. And if you're planning more pregnancies after that, there's more complications that might come if you've had a cesarean before. So it's definitely worth that conversation. But one of the things that blew my mind as I started looking into these topics more in depth and beyond the training I was given as a midwife was the reason doctors would, you know, an obstetrician, I remember it was one birth where this obstetrician walked into the room and told this mom, right, you've been pushing for 2 hours. We know that women who push for more than 2 hours, or who push nearly 4 hours or around the 4 hour mark, are much more likely to have pelvic organ prolapse. And so to resolve that, I think we should do forceps now. Mm. And she agreed. And so she had a forceps birth. And then it bugged me because I just started thinking, I want to know more about this. And so I looked into it. And actually, we don't know what happens if we let women push for longer. What we know is that if women have pushed for 4 hours and we then apply forceps, a forceps birth after hours of pushing make your risk of prolapse much, much higher. But we do not know the answer to the question, what if we left the woman alone and did not apply the forceps? We don't know the answer to that question. Now, after 4 hours of pushing, most moms are pretty much done. Like, they are tired, they're exhausted, it's really hard work. But it depends. Everyone is different. And I've also had women who pushed for that long and were absolutely fine. I had the energy to continue. So even in the advice we're given in the from medical professionals, when it counts, you still, you need to know a little bit more about it. You need to take this time to inform yourself, because it's not that clear cut. It's not black and white. And there is, like, the research in maternity is shocking. Like, there's so much we don't know, and we make assumptions and we give you advice based on someone's opinion. So it's really important in part of preparing for birth that goes beyond the physical and the exercise. It's really important that you're informed.
And that's so hard, because it's overwhelming enough. And I don't think, like, I will never pretend like I would know more than any medical professional. Like, I don't. My scope is just way different. Again, we're trying to combine the worlds of, like, fitness and performance, and then, like, pelvic health for the mom, and then, of course, baby safety, and, like, overall experiential. So, like, their mental health is prioritized. Like, there's so many dots that we're trying to connect here. And it's not to, like, create challenge everywhere. It's just to feel like we're not only looking through one scope. We're able to open up our view a little bit further. And that's, again, that's really tricky.
So yes.
That leads us well to the next point. You said pregnancy and birth are life transitions beyond the physical. Adapting your mindset will be your biggest ally, which is, that kind of says it all, right?
Yes, that's that. So yeah, and we already touched on this. It's your mindset needs to shift, and there's work that can be done in pregnancy to start adapting and you know, learning, adapting and evolving your mindset into that flexibility, giving yourself the grace, giving yourself the space to not be the best athlete, to understand that this is a different season in life that you chose to enter, and now we are doing something different.
Yeah, I'd love your perspective to kind of, like, riff off of that point for when maybe for variables such as maybe you have to get induced, maybe you need Pitocin, maybe you opt for an epidural when you weren't planning for that, or maybe you're told it's time to have a C-section, or, like, kind of whatever other, like, intervention or unexpected thing comes up during your process, like, which could literally be so many things. How do you coach people as a midwife, someone who's worked as a doula, PNPA coach, how do you help them in that moment to go from, like, I thought this was how things were going to go, and now it's not? Is there, like, a reframe that you help them do, or that you could encourage for those moments?
We do a lot of work before that moment, because it's really difficult. If you're really set and really rigid in your ways, it's really difficult at that moment to make a shift that is significant enough to make a difference for you. I go back to, you can do the best that you can, and that's it. There's a level of surrender. There's a level of respecting that this is not just about you anymore that you need to do. And that is one of the reframes. But I also, so I'm sure, You said you had a birth plan with Cade, right?
Like, multiple pages. Yes, it's very cute.
Right. So I've seen all sorts of birth plans, right? With pictures, which I love the picture one, so I don't have to read loads. I can just look at the image and be like, right, I know what you want. I've had birth plans given to me with a table of contents, and, you know, like, I love a plan.
No, it's so pure.
Yeah, and I love a plan. Like, you know, I appreciate that. But one of the things I do to reframe, so that when we don't get caught out in those moments of you need something you didn't plan on having, is that I help my clients develop a birth plan that's not based on what the actions are. We don't go into, I want this intervention, I don't want this intervention, I want an epidural, I want that. We talk about these things because obviously they need to know the ins and outs, But we always start from positioning the experience that you want. So that's the reframe. How do you want to feel at every point? So I want to say that, you know, I want to feel empowered and in control. Okay, great. It doesn't really matter if you need an induction. Then the question just becomes, okay, so how do we keep you feeling empowered and in control? Through an induction.
Right.
So it's about centering how you feel and your emotions and your experience. And then everything else there can be adapted.
It's like there's like so much sports psychology attached to birth. And I think that's like it's really helpful for athletes to reframe it that way, to that athlete brain mindset of like, we have control over like, okay, well, we only have control over like ourselves, you know, and our, what, how we go about thinking about this and how we attach ourselves and our identity to it. Cause I know I felt like I'm a failure. I must've done something wrong. I already suck at being a mom because I did all these things and it didn't work out. Like so many negative stories about my self-worth as a human. And like, that's how I entered having my first baby. Like that set me up, that alone set me up for postpartum depression. You know, because if you go into it feeling like shit and your body had been through, like I was through like 30 something hours of labor into an emergency C-section, didn't really get to hold my baby. So it was like, we already had those variables stacked against me. But then when you add the added pressure of like the mental and emotional, like thoughts of failure, how was I not going to be depressed?
How do you come out of that and not feel quite low and not great about life, you know, like,
yeah, it was slow climb. And there's so much healing that you do where you have to like really reassess who you are and the stories you've created and the belief systems that you have. And it's just, I mean, it's a whole new, it's a climb out, but like a climb towards finding who you actually are and what you actually think and how you actually want to feel and your experience to be as a mom, but also just as a woman. How do you want to feel?
Yeah, that's it. And just protecting that, protecting your rights to have the experience that you want, to feel the way you want, and having a system around you that supports that and centers you as a whole person and not you as a vessel to produce a healthy baby, because there's a lot more to you.
Amen. And that goes well, again, into the next point. Number five, you said 90% of maternity guideline recommendations are not evidence-based. Picking the right providers and learning about birth from independent and trustworthy sources is crucial to having the best experience. 90%?
Yeah.
Maternity guidelines, not evidence-based.
So when your medical professionals give you advice, when they tell you in your situation with these risk factors, this is what we recommend, right? At any stage in the process, from your first appointment to you having your baby, they will give you recommendations based on guidelines. There's, you know, every hospital will have their guidelines, then there's national, international guidelines, but they're quite similar across countries. And they're supposedly, they're not guidelines for you. You do what you like. It's your life. It's your body. But they're guidelines for us so that we all say consistent things. And they should be suggestions based on strong evidence. Unfortunately, when it comes to maternity, there's been a study done. This statistic isn't mine, the 90%. There's been a study done by some doctors here in England, and they found that about 88 to 90% of recommendations were not based on actual good research, but they were either based on really low-grade research, so very questionable results, or expert opinion. Mm-hmm. So absolutely no research behind it. And they just, some doctors in a room somewhere decided that this is what they think it's safest or best. That's very far from being evidence-based.
Okay.
So one of the things that's really important as you prepare for birth is to actually understand the maternity system you're birthing in. We said this at the beginning, different countries, different cultures. I'm in the UK, you're in America, it's different systems. And it's really important that you understand, it's like sharing the map. Like, have professionals that share the map with you and show you what you can expect, right? So as you pick your healthcare providers, but just understanding the culture, even just of the country you birth in, like, what are these people really good at? What are they not very good at? What's their specialty? What are they really comfortable with? Because that's another huge variable that honestly is likely going to shape the way your birth goes and how you feel about your birth more than the exercise program you followed. Who you have around and what they're comfortable with, you know, again, like how much time you get to push your baby. You know, what do they allow? What kind of monitoring? What kind of interventions are they comfortable with? Understanding how the system works is crucial for you to be ready for the experience you're about to face, because otherwise you're going in blind with expectations that aren't really based on reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with all things PNPA, we really recommend having continuity of care. So maybe that is your doctor, but maybe that's also a midwife or a doula that you can consult with or have with you. Or maybe that's having a PNPA coach who can help guide the fitness considerations, because so many people are told by their doctors or midwives or doulas, keep doing what you've always done or don't do this. And like just very, again, non-evidence-based recommendations that they're given surrounding exercise. Don't get your heart rate over this, whatever. Like that's not supposed to be a doctor or midwife's, whoever's scope of practice, right? Your scope technically is more just in the birth realm, not an exercise realm. So yeah, work with a PNPA coach. We can help guide that based on actual evidence and experience. And then working with pelvic floor PT, because then they really understand the pelvic floor considerations, maybe what you're more at risk at, what they've seen in their work, what you can do really proactively throughout your pregnancy to truly kind of prepare for birth. And if you have a midwife or, you know, like then you're able to give some suggestions on pushing positions or positions to move in if a baby is stuck here or if a baby won't flip at a certain point in pregnancy. Here are some movements and positions you can get into that will really help that. Or if you are a high tension athlete, here are some things you can do to start down training your pelvic floor. Do you always squeeze your glutes? Are you always sucking in your stomach, even when you're pregnant? Okay, those are two clues that you're a high tension athlete person and you have a hypertonic pelvic floor, which could make it really hard for you to birth and allow that baby to descend. So here's some things that you can do. Here's some breathing exercises. Here's some movements. Here's some positions that we can really encourage. And it's having that continuity of care around you so that you do feel informed and that you know who to go to for like the right scope, right? And then we can kind of work together and you tap into the professionals you need at any given point in time. Like, I'm not going to help you deliver your baby, thank God. But like, I will give you what I know about exercise and the postpartum side. Like you can help them deliver their baby, right? And you can get them in positions. You can tell them when to breathe or when to do this or when to do that. Like, I can't do that. But together, we could really help somebody's overall experience. And that's why there has to be this like teamwork and that continuity of care for mothers all over the world.
100%. I continuity of care is everything. And honestly, I used to be a hospital midwife and then I became a continuity of care midwife. And when that change happened, everything changed because the way I look after families completely transformed. And you said earlier about, you know, how no one's really giving you advice and no one's really looking at your overall long-term health, pelvic health, quality of life. They're just focused about this particular time. How do we get this baby out safely? And that's really what all the maternity care is around. And I see that obviously with the work I do. And I really think that it comes down to lack of continuity of care. To be fair to these doctors and midwives and nurses, like they'll never see you again. They only see you in that particular time. And so they're going to do the best that they can with the information they've got to take care of you for that bit. But they have no idea the implications of their actions today to your life 3, 5, 10 years from now. It's when I started doing continuity of care that I realized, you know, how tough forceps births were to recover from. I didn't know that as a hospital midwife, because I never saw a family recover from a woman recover from a forceps birth. So you start with continuity of care, you start seeing actually the journey people are on, and you get a whole different view on things. And because I know the people I look after, they know me, we trust each other, then it also means referrals to other professionals. You know, like I send all of my clients have, I pay for them to see a pelvic health physio. Like, that's on me, but that's a priority. And if you want it, I don't want you to second guess it for a second that it's about money. I'll pay for it. You go. But, you know, I then handpick. I vet my people that I work with. So when you have continuity of care, you get a network of professionals that usually work well together, and they're aligned in their values. And it's a whole different experience than seeing different people for just the basic checks. That doesn't prepare you for anything. It's that relationship with someone you can trust and have all these conversations. And then you can unpick really what you want, what works for you, and how to take the next best step.
Man, like, you are such a unicorn of a provider. Like, you just really are. Like, you understand so many angles of birth, of pregnancy, of postpartum care, of pelvic health, of like CrossFit and overall fitness and research. You have your master's in research, like, and you've worked in systems all around the world. Like, I feel like you truly could help anyone. And that is such a rare quality. And I certainly know if I were a pregnant athlete, you would be the person I'd want to talk to. Like, give it to me straight. No BS. Tell me what positions I need to get into. Tell me what breathing exercises I need to do. Okay, birth went this way, or if this, then that. Help me create an actual, like, practical game plan. Like, just no BS. I just want the direct, like, tell me what I need to know, help me adapt to my game plan, and give me a solid, like, forecast on the now what. Because I remember after I had Cade, I was like, shit, what does this mean? I just had this emergency C-section. I was in labor for 1,000,000 hours and I feel like shit. But like, now what? When can I go back to the gym? When can I do this? When can I do that? And like, again, it was solely focused around like only one side or angle of all of the different considerations. But I feel like you're that person who can truly give that big picture, holistic, holistic support for the whole person. You know, we talk about that a lot in the coach course, but you really come at it from being well-informed in all the ways.
I love to hold space for moms and athletes to just really take advantage of this opportunity. You call pregnancy and birth a catalyst to this season in life. You know, it's an opportunity to really elevate and really transform into a whole new, more badass self. And I love holding space for people to be able to do that. And in order to do that, we need to come at it from lots of different angles and learn lots of different skills, because people are all different and fascinating. And I love that I'm able to do that for people.
You do such a great job at that. And if anyone listening is like, holy shit, I really like this lady. Tell us how people can work with you, how they can talk with you. Like, what does that look like? What do you offer?
So if you are local to me, I can be your midwife. that means you live in East Sussex in England. If you are not local to me, then we can definitely meet online. So I can help people with one-to-one consultations. So it could be a one-off, hey, they've told me this, does this make any sense? Or you know, halfway through my pregnancy, how should I train? What makes sense? How do I prepare for birth? So it can be a one-off consultation. It can be a series of consultations. I am putting together a 3-month program that I will launch soon. And then that will be comprehensive of all of the different ways to prepare for birth. Basically, get on my Instagram, send me a DM, let me know what you're looking for, and there's probably a way I can help.
Yeah, we love that. And we can link that. So what is your Instagram and what is your website?
So my Instagram is wisemama.midwifery, which we'll link because it's a lot of spelling to do. And my website is wisemamas.co.uk.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your experience and perspective. Like, all of that is so valuable. And again, I know, like, you truly are a unicorn that can take into account all of the different considerations that many pregnant athletes will experience as they enter a season of trying to prepare for birth. And really love how you've reshaped the training for birth sentiment. So thank you for all of that.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Practice Brave podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review and help us spread the work we are doing to improve the overall information and messaging in the fitness industry and beyond. Now, if you are pregnant and you are looking for a trustworthy exercise program to follow, I have you covered. The Pregnant Athlete Training Program is a well-rounded program for pregnancy with workouts for each week that are appropriate for your changing body. That's 36 weeks of workouts, 3 to 4 workouts each week, and tons of guidance on exercise strategy. We also have an at-home version of that program. If you are postpartum and you're looking for an exercise program to follow, the 8-week Postpartum Athlete Training Program would be a really great way to help bridge the gap between rehab and the fitness you actually want to do. From there, we have the Practice Brave Fitness Program, which is an ongoing strength and conditioning program where you get new workouts each week and have a lot of guidance from myself and my co-coach, Heather Osby. This is the only way that I'm really offering ongoing coaching at this point in time. If you have ever considered becoming a certified pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach, I would love to have you join us. Pregnancy and Postpartum Athleticism is a self-paced online certification course that will up-level your coaching skills and help connect the dots between pelvic health and long-term athletic performance, especially during pregnancy and postpartum. Become who you needed and become who your online and local community needs by becoming a certified pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach. Thank you again for listening to the Practice Brave podcast. I appreciate you. And please help me continue spreading this messaging, this information, and this work.